Hi, this is Thomas Fogelman. You're listening to Mac Edition Radio.
This is Harris Fogel. I'm here at Macworld San Francisco, and it's January 2006. I'm sitting with Bob Weir, musician, of course, founder, one of the founding members of the Grateful Dead, and now one of the leaders of Rat Dog, right?
You bet. Here's me.
And, Bob, you're here in support of the John Lennon tour bus. And so can we talk about this and why you think music education is so important, and technology and music education as well?
Well, today I was working with some older students, college kids, and these guys are serious music students. And it was fun working with them. You know, in some regards, they can play Rings Around Me. But at the same time, I've got some years on them in terms of overview and in songwriting and stuff, and arrangement and stuff like that. I felt, you know, honored to be able to be part of the effort here. At other times, the bus works with like high school students or even junior high, and music education at that level is different. It's I think more important for kids who aren't, who maybe not be called to professional music careers, but at the same time, it's like athletics. You can't fake it. You know, you can't cheat on the tests. You get it or you work at it until you do. And it's so important a process for kids to get with. You know, music, I can't think of any, you know, music and art, I can't think of anything else that has that kind of impart to a kid.
Now, in a lot of, especially in neighborhoods that are not affluent, music or, you know, sports has been a way out of that situation. And do you feel that this tour bus pulling up in those environments really gives a sense of ownership and pride to people working?
I'm hoping so, I'll tell you. You know, if it doesn't, I don't. You know, then there's really something wrong. Now, a lot of poor kids don't have computers to work with at home and stuff like that. Somehow that nut has got to get cracked. But still, in all the experience of getting together with folks you don't know and cranking out a tune, you know, they also on this bus they learn cooperation. They learn how to make a genuine concerted effort.
So it's more, it really teaches group activity or team thinking or kind of, you know, collaboration as opposed to it's all me.
That's exactly it.
Let's talk a little bit about technology itself. I know that, you know, you started off in music a while back, I won't say how long ago, and tube amps were still in vogue, and a Marshall stack and back was pretty high tech. And now we're at a point where synthesizers are old hat and sampling is old hat, and the level of technology for people is entirely different. It's light years away. But it seems like the same musical questions are still very much in evidence. I mean, how do you view the impact of technology both in your own career as a musician, but also on how young people are kind of grappling with a career in music?
Well, really, the facility of recording on digital equipment, though it doesn't yet quite sound as good as really top-of-the-line analog equipment, the facility makes up for it. You can do all kinds of stuff that you just simply can't do on the old analog stuff. But though there's something to be said for just going in and doing it, you know, there's no, in the old audio setups, you couldn't pitch correct your vocal, for instance. You just had to sing it, and there's something to be said for that. But on the other hand, if you're, you know, in your teens and you haven't had years of experience learning to sing, you can still, with the digital stuff, you can come up with a pretty slick sounding recording with all the tools available, the digital tools available.
So in a sense, the technology is democratizing You don't have to book time in a huge studio to get a nice demo. You can do it much more low-key.
You don't have to sweat the details. The machines will do it for you.
So we're at Macworld. Are you a Mac person? Are you a computer person? You know.
You bet. I work on a Mac, and I also have fun on a Mac.
So let's ask, what's your favorite? What kind of Mac do you have? And do you have any favorite applications you tend to use?
Well, I've got a G5, computer, and then I've also got a G4 laptop. Though I want to have a peek at the new laptops that they're putting out right now.
Now, has technology affected you as a songwriter? When you sit down, are you still scribbling stuff on a napkin somewhere, or is the process of, you know, using digital tools, is that a different way to work out the creative process in your mind?
Well, cut and paste is real useful when you're writing lyrics. You know, rather than having to cross stuff out or start over on a new sheet or that kind of stuff, you can just take the part that you wanted, but you want to put it here. It's a normal thing that happens in songwriting. That's helpful. But for the rest of it, you know, I still go about songwriting the way I always used to. I sit down and start beating on my guitar. Or start singing, and, you know, or if I have a lyric that I want to work on, you know, it's just a lot of headbanging until I get something that feels right.
Now, when you've been working with kids on the bus, right, and these are college students, but what surprises? I mean, where are the strengths that you're seeing, and where are the weaknesses? I mean, if you were talking to a parent right now about educating their child in music, what have you learned from this process?
Well, this is a little different because, like I say, these aren't teenagers. These kids are music students, and what I learned from that, you know. I don't know. I learned a little from each guy's approach. I can't exactly describe it. What I learned working with kids, on the other hand, is how to listen for the right idea. Because the kids often will say something and not know that they have the goodie right there. And you have to be able to stop them and say, you know, stop them in mid-rave and say, that's it. Work with that. You know, if you want to get something done quickly, that's the best way to do it. And also, kids will try to overdevelop stuff, oftentimes a little more than the older students, because they don't know when to quit. They don't know that they've hit it and they're going past it, whatever it is.
Now, recordings sound better in many ways than they ever did. You have surround sound, you have high definition. One of your colleagues, Mickey Hart, has pioneered some of the best surround sound mixes. And I know that years ago I was invited up to Skywalker Ranch when he started the World record label with incredible fidelity. I mean, but that was all analog, but it was incredible attention to detail, whether it was sounds of the rainforest. Are you finding that technology, I mean, when you sit down and hear a modern recording, does it sound better to you? Or do you think that there's an overemphasis or the tools are being overused?
Well, like I say, digital doesn't yet sound as good as old-style, top-of-the-line analog. It hasn't quite gotten there yet. I mean, 24 and hopefully soon 36-bit, 192 hertz, that kind of resolution will get pretty close, but still, it'll never quite match analog, because there's, you know, the world isn't binary. The world is analog. And the real thing is always analog. It's only an approximation. Digital is only an approximation. Unless somebody figures out a way to mitigate the difference between one and zero. And I wouldn't imagine that's impossible to do.
Well, I know in the early days of digital, people did tricks. I know that during the Dire Straits recording, Brothers in Arms, one of the first full-fledged digital recordings, I think they laid a microphone on the floor of the studio just to pick up some noise to kick in some extra bits to get better resolution, which seemed kind of crazy when it was supposed to be perfect sound, but it obviously wasn't.
Too perfect is not perfect.
When you, you know, when you look back at the way people are relating to music, what I'm curious about is, do students today have the ability to hear music the same way? In other words, at where I teach at the University of the Arts, we found that students aren't even hearing that a bass is clipping, for instance. They're not as conscious of that. They're kind of bypassing that. And that was a surprising discovery for us, that, hey, people weren't hearing what we were hearing. I mean, do you think that students today are as aware or aware differently?
Well, I think that goes back to there have been batteries of tests done on volunteer, mostly students volunteering to get tested. They've found that digital music raises your stress level. And so kids these days, given a diet solely of digital music, they're not as drawn into the music as kids were back in my day. We were drawn into, because analog music feels good. Digital music doesn't feel good. Your brain is not fooled. There's an image there of the music, but it's like I say, it's not a complete image. It's just on and off.
Now wait, you're talking about digital recordings versus an analog recording, right?
Well, and so music isn't as important a cultural fixture these days as it was back in my day when it was analog, because it's just not as all-encompassing an experience. There's a bit of your body and your mind and your makeup that's standoffish about digital when it hears digital music, so you can't lend yourself as fully to it as you would in an analog circumstance. So therefore, when people don't listen as closely to for the most part to digital music as they did to they just listen to catch the drift, but they don't bathe in it like we used to do when we were kids. And so it's not surprising that they wouldn't listen in the detail that it takes to hear that the bass is clipping.
So, in a sense, the technology is keeping music from having the potential transcendence that it might have otherwise.
Yeah, you bet. Now, like I say, advances may mitigate this to a fair degree. I mean, if they can mitigate the difference between one and nothing, one and zero, on and off. The more they can do that, the more it'll approximate analog music recording. At some point, if they get a fair bit closer, and I have a feeling that 36-bit 192 hertz might be damn near close enough. When the whole medium gets there, it might be damn near close enough so that music will be more appealing to your body.
But the strange thing is you know, the success of iTunes, you know, hundreds of millions of songs downloaded, right? They're being downloaded in a format that's already deliberately compromised to make the file smaller, and it's almost like the public is pretty happy with degraded sound quality.
Yeah, they're happy with it, but it's like I say, it's not going to wig you out quite as much as if they had all that stuff in that little box with in analog form.
So I have one last question, which is that for years, musicians that put together, you know, an album, let's say, of music, concern themselves with every aspect of it, the cover art, the packaging. There was a certain cohesiveness, a holistic nature to that experience, right? Has that changed with the idea of just downloading a song at a time? I mean, do you think that we're just thinking something that's a bygone era?
Well, it's been a bygone era for a long time. The album was developed back in the days of 78s, when if you were listening to an extended piece of music, you had to have several discs to get all the way through. So it came in a little book with a number of sleeves, all, and they called that an album. Then with the that concept was already history when they came up with the 12-inch long playing vinyl disc. The album concept, now the constraints were very artificial. The constraints on the music were you have 40 or 45 minutes worth of recorded material you can get on a record, fill it up. And oftentimes, you know, back when the album was first conceived, all the music on it was related in some way, whether it be a classical piece or a compilation of folk songs or what from a given area or whatever. It was an album of stuff that was all related. With the advent of the 12-inch vinyl disc, long playing vinyl disc, it was just basically in most cases an arbitrary assortment of songs that whatever outfit had produced, whatever artist had produced, all thrown together because there was enough to put on one quote album, and that carried through to CDs. The amount of time you could get on a disc was a little bit more with CDs, and now with iPods and digital and downloading and all that kind of stuff, you don't have the constraints of having to fill up a disc. You put out a song when it's done. You can do this, and then work on another one. There's no real compelling reason I can see to put out an album anymore unless it's all one work. You know, if all the music on it is related, then you put it all out together.
So when you put out an album now, or when you put out a disc, are you still thinking in that conceptual framework of these six or eight songs have a certain flow, or are you thinking each song is more individual?
Well, if I'm going to work on a suite or something like that, then I'll put them out as such. But I'm thinking that for the time being, if I come up with one tune, I'm just going to record it and make it available on its own.
One more last question. How's that? And the question is, you know, that when you were in the Grateful Dead, the fans were allowed to tape concerts and, in fact, encouraged and trading. And it's interesting because now we're at a situation where the music industry says that, you know, illegal downloading of music without royalties is destroying the music industry. How do you, when you look at that in retrospect, or even in the current, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, back in the days when people were recording on tape and taking them home, making a few dubs, and passing them out to their friends, that encouraged community. But these days, when people make a digital recording and post it or make it available to anyone who wants it, with virtually it's just a digital dupe. It doesn't encourage community. It make it harder for the artist to make a living. And I think ultimately that's really going to hurt the artists. It's going to hurt our culture. It's going to hurt everybody. If artists can't make a living and they have to go bag groceries 8 hours a day or go back to law school or whatever, our culture will be much poorer for it.
Do you think music still has the ability to affect change? Can we affect political change or cultural change through music?
You know, I don't think I'd be into it if I didn't believe that.
Well, Bob, I want to thank you, and hopefully that's a prayer for peace. And I want to thank Bob Weir for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Mac Edition Radio. The contents are copyright 2006 and cannot be reproduced without written consent.